It's 2:43 as we roll along here on the Afternoon Magazine. No Child Left Behind has been all over the news for years. We've all heard about the legislation's impact on testing and schools. But some educators think there's an unintended consequence for a childhood ritual. Illinois Public Radio's Lynette Kalsnes reports.
Field trips to see dinosaur bones, art museums, or a performance of Peter and the Wolf are a staple of childhood, like these kids figuring out how to work a water wheel at the Chicago Children's Museum.
Where does that water come from? Where did you get your water this morning?
From the sink.
The sink. And where did that water come from?
This particular workshop on water meets state language art schools 4 and 5. Science goals 11 and 12, and social science goal 17A. That's the information that many principals and teachers need to justify field trips these days. Elizabeth Babcock heads the Field Museum's education department.
They say, you know, I would love to come see your exhibition, but we have to show a certain percentage of improvement on our standardized test, and that means we need to drill and practice in our classroom, and I'm not sure that I can take a day out of school to come on a field trip.
The legislation lets each state set its own standards for what kids need to learn. Although Illinois includes the fine arts and social science in its goals, kids only get tested on math, reading, science, and writing. So field trips involving history or the arts are seen as expendable. Babcock says that's a shame.
Learning from the textbook is not the same as coming in and looking at a 2,000-year-old sandal made by somebody who was actually one of your ancestors.
The number of field trips to Chicago's major museums dropped 17% since the year 2000, according to Museums in the Park. Museum educators figure that's due, in part, to No Child Left Behind. They're concerned enough about the legislation to hold a seminar later this month called No Museum Left Behind.
Well, you would never get myself or the secretary to ever say or believe that museums are expendable, and that's not what we're saying at all.
Christine Cohn is the U.S. Department of Education's top regional official.
We believe that all boys and girls need to be able to read and do math at grade level.
And Cohn says that will make field trips more meaningful. That's just what some museum educators here are trying to do. In addition to the Children's Museum, several institutions, including the Art Institute, the National Museum of Mexican Art, and the Museum of Science and Industry, have looked at their exhibits and listed how they meet state learning standards. Back at the Children's Museum, the students make an aqueduct out of rubber tubing and plumbing connectors. They pour water into their contraption to see if it will work. Wilma Gray, a teacher at J.M. Thorpe Elementary School, says field trips like this reinforce her lessons.
You can see little lights going on in their head. Oh, I should know that answer. If I don't believe that you can teach how to behave by staying at the school, you have to bring them out in order to teach them how to behave.
One of the chaperones is parent Hilda Aguirre.
Field trips are good. I mean, it takes some pressure off the kids. It relaxes them a little because I know my kid gets a little tense around test time, so, and I know ISATs are coming up, and, you know, it's a lot of pressure on him.
The Children's Museum and the Field are among the museums that are bringing the field trip directly to the classroom. The Field Museum's Andy Hirschberger unloads 6 boxes of African instruments from his trunk. Hirschberger's at Clissold Elementary School on Chicago's South Side to teach a class called Africa's Beat. He pulls out a map of Africa and talks about the desert and the people. Then he passes around instruments.
Roll it in your hands.
Kindergartner Damian Evans has a whole list of what he's learned from field trips.
Different classes about animals and stuff, and like people, statues in different countries, and different animals and different planets.
In addition to raising test scores, museum educators say the law is forcing them to reach out to teachers to see what they actually need. And Nathan Ritchie of the Freedom Museum says that's a good thing. But the downside is the risk of making history and the arts less important.
When you put standards on math,
science, and literacy specifically are saying, okay, these three things are alone what's most important for a kid's education.
Richie says the irony here is the disadvantaged schools need to spend so much time teaching to the tests and administering practice tests, they have the least time for field trips. And those are precisely the schools that No Child Left Behind intends to help. I'm Lynette Kalsnes.
And I'm Celeste Quinn, and this is the Afternoon Magazine. Gail Priestley is the director of St. Anthony Farm in California. The farm, an organic dairy farm, is home to a drug and alcohol recovery program. It is one of the programs of the St. Anthony Foundation, an organization founded in 1950 to feed people in need in San Francisco. It began with a dining room and 400 meals. Today, some 34 million meals later, the dining room continues to serve people who are hungry. And the foundation has grown to help people with clothing and housing, and in the case of the farm, people who are working toward recovery from addiction. Gail Priestley joins me this afternoon to talk about how St. Anthony's Farm works and how working on the farm helps people find their way to recovery, finds them help in their struggle toward sobriety. Gail Priestley, hi.
Hi, Celeste.
Thanks for talking with me this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
When did the foundation begin working this farm?
The farm was established in 1954. From the very beginning, some of the down-and-out men in the neighborhood around the dining room came and volunteered in the dining room, and very soon afterwards, we acquired housing for them. But Father Alfred, who started our dining room, could see that some of the men really needed to get out of the city. So he connected with folks up in Sonoma County, was able to purchase a farm, and in the beginning, the farm was a shelter program. It simply provided a place for men to get out in the country, to work on a farm. But as we discovered the realities of addictive illness and the fact that many of the men were struggling with addiction, we developed a full licensed drug and alcohol recovery program in the early 90s.
Now, how many men live and work on the farm at any one given time?
We have 35 men. And they're men who have no other way to pay for their recovery. This is a free program. So the requirement is that you have no resources. These are men that have lost their jobs, their homes, their families, their friends. They've really hit the bottom.
Well, no resources. How does life on the farm then contrast to the lives the participants were living on the streets of San Francisco?
Well, first of all, it's very quiet. And it's very beautiful. Mm. And at night, you can see the stars. And there's good food. They know when their meals are coming from. And there's a structure to the day. There's a structure of work. And many, many of these men are working in our dairy. And, of course, they've never come in close contact with a 1,500-pound cow. And they are actually helped in the recovery process by these cows. They learn from the cows. One of the most amazing things they learn is to trust life. And this happens through the miracle of attending the birth of a calf. And there is no man that is not moved by being present at that event. And they really then become engaged in a nurturing process with that calf. It becomes their calf. And they visit it in the calf barn and see as it grows and develops. So that's a really, really key ingredient to them beginning to trust life and trust in the healing process.
Yeah. Now, every one of these guys is an individual, but this is a universal turning point for all of them. How do you see their lives begin to turn a corner here at this moment?
Well, one of our staff persons puts it this way. A light comes on and their soul comes back. They're working on their healing process, and that's something that can't be controlled and forced. It's the same with working with cows. If you're bringing the cows in from the pasture and you yell and wave your arms and run around the field, the cows are not going to come in. But if you learn to relax and enjoy being with the cows, if you're caring and persistent and patient, the cows will come in. And it's the same thing with their healing process and recovery. They can't control it. They can't force it. But by caring, by relatedness and persistence, they find healing, they find their souls, they come to themselves, and they begin the long path of recovery.
Mm. What else is going on in the course of a day for these men in terms of, we've got them working with the cows and getting them into the to get milked and that kind of thing, but what else is going on through the course of the day?
Well, they really form a community. It's a social model. So they're really helping and living with one another, learning to live in community. They start the day with a meditation, silent meditation. They often start the day with a walk. All of our work ends at 4 in the afternoon because that's when we have our recovery groups. And sometimes they're meeting in small groups. Sometimes they're attending a lecture. Then they have dinner together, and in the evening they go to Alcoholic Anonymous meetings or Narcotics Anonymous meetings.
And how long does someone typically stay there with you?
It's a six-month program, although men who wish to consider to continue can apply for our internship program. We also make organic butter, and the interns work packaging our butter, and they receive a stipend so that when they leave after another 6 months, they have $2,400 in savings.
Oh, okay. Now, does the farm, for those men who aren't not part of the internship, does the farm or St. Anthony's Foundation help those who come through the program make the transition back to life in the city, and how does that work?
Well, absolutely. First of all, not everybody chooses to return to the city. Some people decide to stay out in Sonoma County. And one of the things we've done is we have encouraged them to get a sponsor and to really get used to going to community meetings as well as meetings here on the farm. We do have a recovery program in San Francisco that they can transition into for another 6 months. If they choose not to do that and they need transitional housing, we'll work with them to find that. Or some of them sometimes even have jobs waiting for them. So it just depends on each individual, and we just work individually with each person.
Are there other programs like this across the country?
You know, I don't know of another recovery program that's on an organic dairy farm. But there are other programs that have work components.
Yeah, work, and I would imagine that there's no obligation to participate in prayer or in mass, that kind of thing. But I'm wondering.
No.
But I'm wondering if there isn't a spirituality, if there isn't a spiritual element to this program that you've got.
Well, this is a 12-step program,
yeah.
So there is a certain spirituality in the 12-step process, trusting in a higher power, however you understand that. And we have a van that goes to different churches on Sunday, so our program participants can choose to go to church or choose not to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to them. But as you face yourself in your need for healing, I think that usually is a spiritual process.
Yeah. One last question. How many are able to stay sober, and do you have returning men, participants?
Well, you know, it takes years to develop an addictive illness to the point where the men are at that come into our program. So, first of all, it's not just graduating from our program. Each day they're working on themselves and staying sober. We count that as a success. About a third of the men graduate from the six-month program. For men that leave, they can wait after 30 days and then apply to return. And sometimes that does happen. And sometimes people need a couple of times before they're ready to stay for the full 6 months.
Mm. There we've got to leave it. What an interesting story. Gail, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste.
Gail Priestley is the director of St. Anthony Farm in California. The farm, an organic dairy farm, is home to a drug and alcohol recovery program for 35 men.
Earth and sky.
I think we have an obesity crisis, particularly with children, and people need to see that this is a tragedy in this country.
That's Christina Economos at Tufts University. She studies childhood obesity, and she says the problem is getting worse.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, over 9 million U.S. children aged 9 to 16 are overweight or obese. That's more than triple the number of 3 decades ago.
If we let obesity go unchecked, there are mathematical models showing that half of children will be overweight in the next 30 or 40 years. Two-thirds of adults are actually overweight or obese. That will rise. We'll have more health care costs. We'll have a society that's not well and not productive, and most importantly, not happy.
Economists and her colleagues have been studying how the external factors of environment and culture contribute to childhood obesity. They found that support from schools and communities can keep children from unnecessary weight gain.
And we need to look way beyond how individuals behave. And we need to stop blaming genetics, but really look at our environment and our policies and our society and what we value. And those are very big barriers because cultural norms take a long time to become established, and they're going to take a long time to actually shift as well.
That was Christina Economos. There's more at our website. I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 15 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name-brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. And this is the Afternoon Magazine, getting ready to make way for the world. That's coming up next here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our technical director today is Henry Frayne. The producer for the Afternoon Magazine is Harriet Williamson, with help today from Martha Deal. Mike Sola's forecast for Champaign-Urbana tonight: mostly cloudy with light snow likely overnight, the low 24. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of flurries early, then becoming partly sunny, the high 35. Tomorrow night, partly to mostly cloudy, the low 15. And the outlook for Friday, mostly cloudy and colder with the chance of some snow showers and flurries, the high Friday 28.